Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Why am I with Seabus Super?
Because I'm a builder and they take care of me.
Well, I had an accident on the worksite and they helped me out, no worries.
Yeah, they helped me out real fast.
Mate, they just get me.
Because they are for all of us.
Seabus, for all of us. To consider if Seabus is right for you, visit seabussuper.com.au for a copy of the PDS.
I had to go about it, write it out and find it myself. And there's some stories I can tell you.
This is the final Web World Cup Daily with Adam Collins and Jeff Lemon for Seabus Super. The industry's super fun hitting your retirement for six on a day when Pakistan didn't only keep themselves in the competition, they gave themselves an enormous chance of making their way to the Final Four by beating New Zealand. Jeff, it was a tough old game, wasn't it? Tell us all about it.
Adam, it was a grind. New Zealand were in trouble early. Shaheen Shah, Afridi bowled a beautiful spell, a lot of pace, picked up three wickets. They struggled on a pitch that was doing a fair bit, but Jimmy Neesham dug in, ground out a very unlikely sort of innings for him. 97 not out he made to get them up to 237, with Colin de Grando making 64 as well, but Pakistan knocked it off. Basically three wickets down. Babar Azam made a ton. Harris Sahail made 68, and they did it themselves.
Oh, I can't believe that Harris Sahail wasn't in this Pakistan side from the start of the tournament. That was a masterful innings. They were under a lot of pressure when they were being beaten on both edges of the bat. Santner, especially the left arm tweaker. The big strategic error, I think, from New Zealand was that they only played one spinner and they had to get through in the end. Eight overs from Kane Williamson. He did pick up one wicket, but what they would have given for East Shodi if they'd known the pitch was going to play like a day five track.
Yeah, and Shadab Khan, the leggy for Pakistan, was important as well. I think it took them by surprise. It would be easy to look at the scorecard for this and say, oh, relatively low total, they chased it down, you know, well, Harris Sahail got out just at the end, so they were four down. It looks like a cruise. It was never a cruise. Nothing about this match was a cruise for any batsman today. De Grandhomme and Neesham had to work really hard. They had to soak up a lot of deliveries and just sort of stew away through the middle before they could start to flourish a bit at the end and hit out a little bit at the end, and even then only got it up to 237, and then it was a fight all day. Babar Azam, the quality of his play, we've been waiting for him to do this, I think, the whole tournament. And then Harris Sahail, Pakistan just looked like a different team since he came in. He played so well against South Africa. He's really the reason they won that match at Lord's, and here he goes making the telling contribution again.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that Shoaib Malik was in the side ahead as Harris Sahail. I mean, we talked about it when he made his 89 at Lord's a couple of days ago. He's just an absolute class act. As for Babar Azam, I mean, that response at Edgbaston today, it brought back memories of 99, 20 years ago with those loud horns. Pakistan, who were all but sunk when they lost to India, what was that, 9 or 10 days ago? Due to that, it all comes back to that Sri Lanka win against England. If not for that, this game has a little bit riding on it. Pakistan are still in the tournament, theoretically, if they win today. But just the way the points tally is stacking up now, they play Afghanistan in the next game. We'll come to that in part two. But it just, I mean, I'm not going to say they're favourites to make the top four. That'd be overstating it. But gosh, I feel like they're going to.
They're in it up to their necks anyway, and that Bangladesh-Pakistan game to finish things off is starting to look even tastier. But yeah, we will come to that in part two. I think the most interesting bit was that, and I saw some people discussing this online, you'd rarely call a Pakistan team clinical, but this run chase was clinical. You felt, yeah, while Harris Sahail and Babar Azam were out there together, you felt there was no way they could lose it. And in the back of my mind, I kept expecting that wicket to fall and New Zealand to come back into it and roll them over, but it just never looked like happening.
Yeah, it was kind of hard to believe that Santner ended up not taking a wicket, given I mentioned before it was turning square, especially considering how effective Shadab Khan had been. He picked up Kane Williamson with an absolute beauty. But Shaheen Afridi, I said on Twitter the other day I wanted to buy shares in Shaheen Afridi. He took 10 overs, 3 wickets, 3 for 28. I copped a lot of grief about that too. People are going, oh, but he's no good. He is very good at cricket. He's very quick. He's young. He's 19 years old, and some of his celebrations are tip-top as well. And to pick up Munro, then Taylor and Latham in quick succession, leaving New Zealand at one stage at about 5 for 83, I think it was. He was the reason why. Well, actually, it was 4 for 46 when he spelled finished, and then Shadab Khan picked up Williamson. It set it up to roll through them, but enter Jimmy Neesham. I mean, we interviewed him on the weekly show a couple of weeks ago. He's a guy who has illustrated that he doesn't feel as burdened by the game as he perhaps once did. He's playing in a freer fashion, and maybe that helps him in a situation like today when the pressure's piling up and he needs to play a defining hand. Because that's exactly what he did, 97 not out. Colin de Grandhomme was his dance partner for the vast bulk of that, who made 64. There was so much scrutiny over these New Zealand all-rounders coming into the tournament, and that seems to be the engine room at the moment. Granted, they didn't do so well with the ball, but they did make contributions in that discipline last time around. They look quite deep suddenly.
Well, there was certainly scrutiny over whether they could play together in the same team and whether they could bat together, that sort of thing. You know, that partnership will have put that aside today. Muhammad Amir got a wicket up the top as well, got Martin Guptill cheaply, so that was significant. And, you know, Amir's got a stack of wickets in this World Cup. So, yeah, that opens the door for Shaheen Shah to get his threefer and then Shadab to get Kane Williamson, which was key. And at that point, I thought, well, they're done here. But Neesham, what was most impressive was that he just strapped in for the long haul. He told us on the weekly show that he was the proud owner of the record for the fastest 48 in one day international cricket. But so he's known as a real big hitter, but he didn't play that way. He just batted out, you know, 5 overs, 10 overs, 15, 20, stayed there for the long haul, was happy to get a single or two off a lot of those overs. He hit a few sixes when there was the right ball to do it to, but that was largely later on in the innings when he attacked a little bit more towards the close and gave them a boost at the end. So the fact that they were even any sort of shout in this match at all was due to him. And it didn't look like it would be easy on this wicket the way things had panned out. And it started that way because Imam and Fakhar are both so important as the openers for Pakistan, and they were gone cheaply as well. Lockie Ferguson and Bolt picked up a wicket, and you thought, well, there could be trouble here. And then Muhammad Hafeez did what he's done a few times so far, which is see a part-time spinner and think, hello, I'll help myself, and hold out on the fence to Kane Williamson once again.
Yeah, it wasn't lost upon the supporters on Twitter that it's the second time in a row that Hafeez has got out to a part-time off-spinner.
Third, Aidan Markram as well, against South Africa.
Well, yeah, well, Markram and Williamson stand out to me. Was there a third somewhere too?
Finch.
Finch, right, of course.
Aaron Finch at Taunton off a full toss.
Right you are. So he made 32 or 50 balls, but he played through the bulk of that tough period when Ferguson was going at them.
And he was important, I thought, there.
Yeah, no, he was. He saw it off. He saw off the challenge that Ferguson presented, which meant they turned to spin. Santner came on and started ragging it. And that's where it was such an important passage of play with Barbara Azam and Harris Sahail. It could have easily fallen apart at that point. I mean, all that 130, 140 was on the cards had Santner got a breakthrough, but he couldn't. And in the end, I think that I'm reluctant to criticise Kane Williamson ever for obvious reasons, but he left himself on too long. He didn't bring Santner back quickly enough. He ended up turning to Colin Munro at one stage before he brought Santner back for his last three overs. He went back to Ferguson at one stage when it was clear that there was only one match winner out there, and it was their spinner, and they just got him back when it was too late, when the two set men were dominating. They were willing to take a couple of chances, and often, you know, as a captain, the temptation is to load up at the back end, but they needed to go and win that game earlier. They needed to win that game around the 27 to 32 over mark, and they left it too late. And by that stage, Harris Sahail was batting like an absolute dream. The way he's steering the ball behind point, he's just immaculate at the moment. And Barbara Azam, who was relatively quiet for the most part, he struck boundaries, you know, more consistently towards the end, but he was just staying, sticking around and doing what he needed to do. And that's his 10th one-day 100. He's only about 23 years old or something like that. There's a reason why they talk about him as being, you know, he may not be in the Fab Four right now alongside Williamson, Root, Kohli and Smith, if we kind of broadly consider them the four top players in the world. But if you were doing a top eight, Barbara Azam would be in there.
Yeah, well, certainly for white ball stuff, he hasn't really made the jump in Test cricket as yet, but his first World Cup 100 as well. Yep. Harris Sahail, I can't choose between a few shots. There was a square drive off Lachie Ferguson. There was a back foot force through cover that was exceptional. There was a glide to a very fine third man, and then there was the flamingo six that he smashed over Trent Bolt's head back down the ground, one foot in the air, hello sailor style. And it was just, it was audacious, it was ridiculous, but it was so well timed that it worked.
All the judges were giving him full style points for that, no doubt, and that flamingo move was a beautiful one. So I'm so glad for Harris Sahail, and obviously Barbara Azam's going from strength to strength. I saw on the TV coverage that we can now say that every one of Pakistan's results in this tournament marries up with 1992 in terms of the win-loss washout sequence. So,
smashed by West Indies in the first game, washed out, lose a couple.
So the only thing that didn't marry up was that they won by 6 wickets in the end, because stupidly Harris Sahail got himself run out with a run to win or whatever it was. That would have also been a 7-wicket win like it was in their 7th fixture in 92. So they're still broadly on track to replicate that, and of course go on and win the tournament, I have no doubt.
And I liked how big Martin Guptill's appeal was with 2 runs to win off 12. He was still invested in there as he dived and took out the stumps, not quite jaunty style, but just about. Player of the day for me was Harris rather than Babo, because I just thought that was the point where Pakistan could have lost the game, where he came in and played an absolute gem.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Harris Sahail, and also Shaheen Afridi, who I interviewed him just after his first T20 international wickets, and I think I might have mentioned this in the pod a couple of weeks ago, but it's worth revisiting. He said that he had a dream before his T20 debut that his first wickets would be Aaron Finch and Glenn Maxwell, and the dream came true. So he's one of those kind of characters. He's quite engaging. So, and I love his celebrations, and he's, all of 19, not even 20 yet, and you can just see that in him they've got someone who can without a doubt play for a long period of time and see the future as well, hopefully.
Hall of Fame for today. I think there's only one. I think there can be only one, and that is Sarfraz Ahmed appealing for a caught behind from what was a bump ball as it squeezed through to him. The umpires go upstairs and do the umpire review and check it and look at the video and say, no, that's a bump ball. He then goes to DRS because they're not allowed to use Snicko if it's an umpire review for some reason. I don't know why not, but they can't. They can only use a camera. So he sees that they've turned this down based on the camera angles but not Snicko, and goes, no, he's definitely edged that. I definitely want it, and puts the T signal up, which I didn't know you could do, but you can do, because the umpire's decision isn't made until the third umpire's decision has come back to the on-field. Then they make the decision. Then you've got 15 seconds, and he goes, bang, T-bone, straight upstairs, at which point they find it was a bump ball because they'd already found it was a bump ball, and then turned and Pakistan lost their review. So to Sarfraz Ahmed for that moment of captaincy genius, although he kept beautifully early on. And the one thing we didn't mention is Pakistan were electric in the field for the first time this tournament. They were finally on.
Including the catch that was taken from Kane Williamson, which was probably the turning point of the game, really, when you consider how important he's been in the last couple of outings they've had. I'm very happy to put Sarfraz Ahmed in the Hall of Fame. I have a lot of time for Sarfraz Ahmed. He's one of the more interesting guys in the caper, and he should be in our final 32. This is the end of part one. We'll be back in just a tick. Jeff, some people might disagree, but we kind of have some cricket expertise.
I think we have no expertise, though, when it comes to sensible things like planning and retirement and planning for retirement.
Well, lucky then, we know the people who do know their stuff over at Cbus, and all Cbus members have access to their team of qualified advisors.
Wow, Adam, I think I've heard of Cbus before, about 400 times on our podcast. What does a qualified advisor do?
It means if you're a Cbus member, they can assist you over the phone about investment options, contribution strategies, and planning the best way to maximise your super for retirement.
So you're saying they can help you maximise the middle overs and then have a big surge in the final 10? Cricket reference, get it?
Yes, and it's probably going to go a lot longer than the World Cup.
Well, you can make sure you don't get caught without a retirement plan. Visit cbussuper.com.au.
Do it today. This is the final World Cup Daily, day 28. Adam Collins, Jeff Lemon for CBUS Super. Casting forward, we have some, well, that was a big game today. That was huge in the context of the last couple of weeks. But we've got, they just keep coming, don't they?
I can't believe we haven't made a 28 days later gag at this point. After England lose to Australia at Lord's, London utterly deserted.
Well, this is what last time around, England's campaign was over in 28 days. And Dave Tickner and Peter Miller wrote a book called 28 Days Data about the England 2015 failed World Cup mission, and tracing through from 92 to then why they'd always struggled so much in these tournaments. Right. So it's all very appropriate given what happened yesterday at Lord's.
Well, both these teams play again on Saturday, doubleheaders. Pakistan have Afghanistan, which is their chance to bank a couple of points and shore up their campaign.
And let's not forget about that. They've got to go out and try and thrash Afghanistan.
And New Zealand have Australia at Lord's. Now, if we cast forward and we have a little look at the table, here's the interesting bit. Pakistan now have 7 points. So do Bangladesh. And they both got two games to play. And their last game is against each other. Mm. Bangladesh have to beat India before they play Pakistan. Pakistan only have to beat Afghanistan, which on paper should be easier before they play Bangladesh. They're sitting just behind England on 8 points. England have to play India and then New Zealand. So if England lose those games, then they are very likely to be run over the top of. If England only win one of those games, they could still be run over the top of by Pakistan or Bangladesh.
If I were England right now, if I were Owen Morgan right now, I'd be saying to his colleagues, we now need to win both games. There's no point thinking about winning one because they finish up before anyone else. So their destiny won't really be in their own hands. So the only way they can guarantee progress is winning both games. This might actually be weirdly a good thing for them, that they had New Zealand got over the line today and Pakistan had been on the back burner. I mean, it might have worked the other way. They might have thought they were only needing to win one. I think this might be in England's hands to an extent.
It also means that tomorrow's game is much more of a must win for India as well. They play the West Indies here. India are on 9 points, Pakistan and Bangladesh on 7, so one win behind. So if India did somehow drop this game here tomorrow, they would find themselves in a pretty sticky situation as well, having to face Bangladesh for basically playing off for a spot. So both of those
they need England to beat them as well, though. So, I mean, India are still undefeated in this tournament.
India should be fine.
They're right.
If they lose this game tomorrow, they then have to keep winning after
that. That's right. They won't be, because, of course, they had a washout through there as well. So thankfully, for their sake anyway, net run rate's going pretty nicely. But all the same, you're right. We said it a couple of times now, the effect of Sri Lanka winning that game back on Friday continues to have an effect on the tournament.
And New Zealand, on 11 points, they're pretty much guaranteed to be safe, but there's the slight chance that if they lost to Australia and then to England, who they've got to take on in the next couple, then, you know, there's some chance of finding themselves in strife as well. So Australia's the only one with the guaranteed spot thus far. There's plenty to play for. We have a massive few days between now and, say, Sunday when India play England at Birmingham.
And that we do, and it does not stop. We're in Manchester looking out over Old Trafford as the sun just about readies itself to set, and we can't wait to be back with you on the Final Word Daily Show tomorrow, on which we will be wrapping up India and the West Indies. Thanks for your company as always, and thanks to CBUS Super, the industry super fund, hitting your retirement for six. I'm Adam Collins. He's Jeff Lemon. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you then. George Benson. I ain't protected, brother. I ain't fenced in. If my future questions my current senses, that'd be the same we've been doing for centuries. Sorry if I ran out to empty, wrote this so you know what I meant here. I had to go about it, write it out and find it myself. And there's some stories I can tell you. I had to fail, had to fall, just for what I did well. And there's some stories. Every day, hundreds of thousands of us are building a future we can all be proud of. For over 34 years, the Growth CBUS My Super option has returned an average of 9.29% per annum for its members, while investing in projects that not only create jobs, but something better. CBUS. For all of us. To consider if CBUS is right for you, go to cbussuper.com.au for a PDS. Past performance is not a reliable indicator of future performance.